The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
With me now, though, is Tanya Gordienko, who's a Ukrainian analyst, Bill Forry, who's a Boston journalist, and Greg Ballard, a former mayor. You're all very welcome, and it's good to see you all. And Bill, I've sent best wishes to your dad, who gave us a great tour of Boston when we were there a few months ago as part of Ireland Gateway to Europe. Your dad, Ed, who is so well known in that part of the world. Tanya, can I start with you, and can I start with the issue of Ukraine, of course, the conflict that Donald Trump is going to solve within 24 hours of becoming president. There has been movement in that regard, you know, in recent weeks, and a huge focus on this kind of summit in Alaska and then the meeting with Zelensky in the White House and what have you, and, you know, meetings in Downing Street, this coalition of the willing. Is your sense that there has been progress, real progress, or are we in the same place we were several weeks ago?
I mean, if you watched the news today, it was one of the most massive air attacks on Kyiv and other major cities in Ukraine last night, with a lot of casualties and a lot of people killed in the attack, those who were injured, those who went missing, because there's still an ongoing operation of, you know, the search parties through the debris and destroyed buildings. So we don't really know the number of the casualties by the end of the day. So I think it sends pretty strong message about where these negotiations are going, because Ukrainian people keep dying in a really awful and brutal way. So that's I think, the highlight of this round of negotiations. Like, Putin is not stopping doing what he was doing for many, many years in Ukraine.
Was there a moment a couple of weeks ago where there was a sense of optimism that something might happen, or, you know, have the Ukrainians been sufficiently burned on that front so many times that they knew better?
You see, this is what we were talking today during breakfast, right? Because when Donald Trump was about to assume office, he was president-elect, and he said, like, oh, I'm going to end the war in, like, 3 days or whatever, like, record short number of days. And it didn't really happen. And then he said, like, okay, I'm giving, like, you know, the deadline for Russia to, like, you know, have a proper negotiations and, you know, have a peace deal. And nothing happened again. And it was going in rounds and rounds and rounds. And I think at some point you just stop really expecting much. So I think when the Alaska summit started, I personally didn't expect much out of that, because we've been in this situation before when there's, like, you know, the looming hope, but nothing really is happening. And then we just wake up to explosions.
Is there a prevailing view then as to how this gets resolved if it's not by Donald Trump?
Oh, I honestly didn't expect to war go on for, I mean, the active phase of war for 3 years already. So it's really hard to tell. It's like, you know, flipping a coin. Is it going to end up tomorrow, or is it going to end up in another 10 years, right? So I wouldn't say that there is, like, you know, one point of view among Ukrainians on that.
Greg, we obviously have, you know, a geographical proximity here that most Americans won't share. So how much attention as an issue does this get, you know, amongst Joe and Josephine public in the U.S.?
A fair amount, actually.
Okay.
It's on the news pretty much every day, and people are following it. And I mean, I think there's two sides to it in America. There's always a side where we don't want to get involved with anything, which is nonsense, since we're America and the want to use the term superpower, the lone superpower left. But, you know, we've had such a reputation over the years of providing for others, doing the right thing, sometimes not the right thing, but at least providing relief and assistance to others in many, many forms. So that makes no sense. The other side is this is a democracy. We should be defending it. And I've been to war. It bothers me when people don't realize what Ukraine is going through. And they're a democracy and somebody we should be supporting. And that has been the dominant action so far, even though it's a little crooked how we get there sometimes. But so far it's held. And I think it will hold in the future, because doing otherwise makes no sense to me. And position America just put us in a terrible position.
Do you worry that we're on the precipice of a change in how America sees itself in the world. Not so much as that kind of that superpower that maybe has a moral obligation to get involved.
I'm worried about the soft power that is eroding. I am, and I think others are too. When you see that the university money, the research money being pulled back a little bit, what happened with USAID and how some of that occurred was very problematic, I think, to a lot of people. So our ability to reach out to the world and project the soft power, the friendly power, if you will, able to influence events, I'm afraid, and I think other people are afraid, it's eroding right now.
Yeah, and what if that continues to erode? You know, some people talk about that what we're beginning to experience is the start of, you know, of the Asian century. You know, that while you may have described yourselves a moment ago as the last remaining superpower, that certainly another one has emerged, and that actually it'll be China and rather the broader Asian kind of region that actually becomes the kind of gravitational focus of the world's attention.
I'm actually very open about saying this. Yes, to a point. I've heard the Asian century for like the last 50 years now. Yeah. So
it's like cold fusion. It's always 10 years away, and it always will be.
But that said, I think China obviously is doing those activities, overseas bases, pushing out their soft power, is very obvious. But I still think in 30 to 40 years, I think the linchpin nation of the world is India. It'll have probably the second largest economy. It will have, it'll be the largest democracy in the world still, largest population in the world. And how we treat India now, I think, is going to matter in 30 to 40 years, because I think the world is going to, split is not the word I want, but there certainly would be camps of authoritarianism and democracy. And we want to make sure that India stays where it is.
The U.S. won't be one of those camps of authoritarianism, will it?
I don't think so. I'm actually very optimistic.
Okay. Bill, are you as optimistic?
I'm not sure I'd say optimistic is the word I'd go with. I'm hopeful, but certainly there's reason for great anxiety. And just for a moment on the Ukraine front, what we saw in Alaska from my perspective, and again, I'm a Bostonian, I'm from Massachusetts, in addition to having, 25%, of our residents have Irish ancestry, but they're also, very much lean to the left. And Donald Trump would not be a popular figure where I'm from. 80% of Bostonians voted against him in the last election, so I'll say that up front. But from our perspective, this sort of chaotic approach to his diplomacy, putting aside the soft power problem, is, this what we saw unfold in Alaska and in the day after it at the White House with Zelensky. Now, he was better treated than his last appearance at the White House for certain, but it took a phalanx of European leaders to be at his side for that to be the case. So this sort of chaos theory approach to diplomacy, to me, has failed in the last couple of weeks. We are not seeing any movement from Vladimir Putin that would suggest he has any interest in a ceasefire. In fact, it may be the opposite. So if anything, what we've seen from this administration so far has been regression in terms of the Ukraine approach.
And Tanya, does that then create an even greater obligation on that so-called coalition of the willing, as they were describing themselves, these European powers, to step into that breach?
Yes, I think we've been at that point before. Remember this visit of Zelensky in the Oval Office when he was basically attacked, right? Like verbally attacked. And that was a sign from the European partners that they are willing to support and they are willing to step in. So I guess we're seeing...
I guess the question, to cut across, is to what extent? There's always been a slight reluctance to go as far as the Ukrainians want them to go. And you go right all the way back to 3 years ago to the types of missiles they wanted. And, it took an awful lot of convincing to get what they wanted. And then they wanted air defense systems. It took an awful lot of convincing to get them. Then they wanted fighter jets. It took an awful lot of convincing. We're kind of on this merry-go-round where Ukraine keeps saying, here's the things we need.
Yeah.
And the kind of Europeans think, we'll think about that for a
while. I get what you're saying, but I guess maybe it's a little bit of a cultural thing, right? Because Europe is famous for bureaucracy and a lot of bureaucratic structures and discussions and so on. So yeah, we have to push through that as well. In addition to everything that we are dealing with the war. So it's a really dumb situation when you cannot really push the partners, But at the same time, you have to, because like basically your survival is in balance for that. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm really addressing the question you were trying to say, but I'm just trying to explain you the situation of average Ukrainian, right? You have to go through everything that is happening with the war and then kind of try to sort of plan for the future. Whatever, like, crazy it sounds, but still, you cannot just dismiss that as well.
And is there a growing acceptance in Ukraine that that future, that certainly that immediate future, will involve ceding some land to Russia and to Vladimir Putin?
This is
as
really
unpalatable and all as most people listening to the show would find it.
This is really unpopular thought in Ukraine, because I really like the argument that Marie Yovanovitch, the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, made. She said, like, back in 2008, Russia started the war in Georgia, and nothing really happened. Like, rest of the world said, we are super concerned. Yes, they are concerned, but no real action. Then the annexation of Crimea happened. Rest of the world, again, super concerned, but no real action. And then Russia starts the war in the east of Ukraine and with a full-scale invasion in 2022. And only after that, we started to have some little drops of assistance, right, you know, in terms of military equipment and training, etc. So, yeah, I mean, if nothing really is happening, then Putin and Russia, they just feel free to do whatever they want, because they are not being kept responsible for what they're doing. So I think the point is that there's like a really huge expectation that finally the coalition and the partners will do real action.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, the thought about giving out the land, it's not going to stop the war. Mm. It will just freeze it for maybe another 10, 20 years, and it will start over again. And this is the war that like the next generations of Ukrainians going to inherit. And I think it's logical. I'm going to just finish this out. I think it's logical to understand that we're going to have a huge, huge population gap in the future, with a lot of people moving outside the country. And like, you know, the birth rates just dropping down, because like it's really risky to have a baby right now in Ukraine. So, yes, like the future is really uncertain for us.
Greg, you want to jump in there?
There's history here, obviously. When the Berlin Wall came down and Kiev, Ukraine gave up their nuclear weapons with security guarantees that proved to be false. And then you add that to the fact that Russia thinks Ukraine is Russia, and that Putin, frankly, has been playing American president since the mid-2000s. And every president says we're going to have a reset, or we're going to get to him, we get it, and I'll understand him, I'll talk to him. And it's all nothing, because Putin just smirks at them, and has been doing that for 20 years almost, and nothing ever happens. Why we now think that Putin is going to do something with the current president is bizarre to me. He's not. Mm-hmm. And he continues to court American leaders and European leaders, saying, I'm going to do this and I might look at this, but he's going to do nothing other than what he wants to do.
Well, and what do you imagine is Donald Trump's view of all of this? There was a school of thought when he assumed office. You know, he had a spheres of influence view of the world, and actually, he didn't really care what happened to Ukraine ultimately.
Well, I'm not sure that was a common notion in America that something was going to happen. Certain people probably thought that was going to happen, but anybody with any sense of not even deep history, just recent history, would tell you that was not going to occur.
Hmm. Bill, what do you imagine is Donald Trump's view of Ukraine and those long-term concerns, as Tanya and Greg described them there? You know, I guess the other view of Donald Trump is that, you know, he doesn't take long-term view of things. You know, it's a kind of, he's a transactional approach.
Transactional. And man, I would love to try to get in this man's head and understand any
would
of
you?
This. I think he said during the Monday meeting at the White House, where Zelensky was there, to the French president, something to the effect of, you won't believe this, but I think he really wants to do this for me. You know, it's like, it seems delusional to most of us, I think. And I think his real motivation is to get that Nobel Peace Prize, to go to Oslo someday, and a ceasefire on any terms. He doesn't care what the terms are. He just wants the ceasefire. That is not a good way for American president to leverage our power and our position in the world. And frankly, again, it's chaotic and it's not leading to anything that's benefiting the people of Ukraine or Russia.
And it leads to future wars.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
It does. And future discussions like this that I hope will be as illuminating for people. Listen, thanks a million, folks, for joining us here in the Dombrody Visitor Centre. We are here in New Ross for the Kennedy Summer School. Tanya Gordienko is a Ukrainian analyst. Bill Farrey is a Boston journalist. And Greg Ballard is a former mayor, former jarhead as well. He told me he touched on it as well.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.